right, welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Monday, September 15th, 2025. Thank you for joining me today. I'm Mike Adams, and if you haven't yet seen it, I have put out an article on naturalnews.com called A Billion Voices of Truth. Mike Adams announces moonshot mission to empower humanity with hidden knowledge. And the reason I mention this is because if you scroll down, my mission statement is put out in three languages now, three different language videos. That is, that's Spanish, that's Chinese, and that is Russian. Unfortunately, our content management system can't handle Chinese and Russian in terms of the text. So you just need to click on the video and then you'll hear it in Spanish and Chinese and Russian. And what I'd like to do actually here, these videos are created using AI auto translation that uses my voice tone and quality, but of course, a language translation into the target language. And I'd like to just demo this for you because this is going to be a technology that you will increasingly encounter. And you may not know, you may not realize how good this is. It's really remarkable. And it's also coming out where it can match the lip movement as well. So I want to show you these examples. So first, I'm just going to play a few seconds for you just so you get the idea. We'll do like, 20 seconds or something. En español. Here we go. Bienvenidos a todos. Mi nombre es Mike Adams y estoy publicando este mensaje en solo tres idiomas, español, chino y ruso. ¿Y por qué? Bueno, porque es un momento crítico para que los pueblos del mundo se comuniquen entre sí, para cerrar la brecha del idioma usando la tecnología moderna. All right, now let's listen to it in Chinese. And by the way, since I do speak Chinese, but not nearly as well as this video shows. But I noticed that the pronunciation of the Chinese in this auto translation is very much mainland China, whereas I tend to speak Chinese more like a Taiwan Chinese style, which does have a different pronunciation. So when I heard myself in this video speaking mainland Chinese, I was like, whoa, that's funny, because I would never say it that way. But here we go. Check it out.
欢迎大家。 我叫麦克亚当斯，我将以三种语言发布这条信息：西班牙语、中文和俄语。为什么呢？因为现在是世界各地人民相互沟通，利用现代科技弥合语言鸿沟的。Okay,
and then finally we're going to play some Russian for you. This is really interesting for me to hear because, of course, I don't speak or understand any Russian at all, other than yet. So I have no idea what is being said in this. Whereas with Espanol, I can totally track it. With Chinese, most part, I can track it. But Russian, I've got no idea. Check this out.
Добро пожаловать всем. Меня зовут Майк Адамс, и я выпускаю это сообщение всего на трех языках – испанском, китайском и русском. И почему? Потому что сейчас критически важное время для людей всего мира общаться друг с другом, преодолевать языковой барьер с помощью современных технологий.
All right, I did pick up the one word there, technology, or technology, technology. I did catch that one word in Russian. Okay, that's good. Anyway, that technology, you're going to see that a lot more, and we will be using it as well to put out important podcasts. And we're going to be putting out interview highlights in different languages. And of course, our language set will also expand into Japanese, Italian, French, German, not just Spanish, maybe Korean at some point. I'm not exactly sure, but I know that we will definitely be doing Japanese next and some, you know, the other European languages as well. So we'll just see how this goes. I'd love your feedback. And if you prefer to hear some of our content in your own language, if English is your second language, and I know that's true for a lot of our listeners, then you may really enjoy this format. Just remember that it's an automatic translation. It's a machine translation. And sometimes it loses its mind. So don't blame me if it says something crazy. not my fault. I don't know. Maybe it's hallucinating. Okay, now we are going to cover a little bit about the Charlie Kirk situation, just some developments that have happened. And I've got some quite a bit of other news on other topics to cover that I think is really important. But in terms of Charlie Kirk, I did put out a survey on X. And I put the survey out because I'm seeing that most people online, at least on X, most people appear to be convinced that Israel is behind this shooting. And so I decided to put out a poll, and I gave people four choices. Here's the question. Based on the information we know so far, who do you think is most likely behind the assassination of Charlie Kirk? And by the way, I'm not trying to make light of his death. I pray for him. I pray for his family. It was a real tragedy. This is a horrible event that this has happened in the United States. I'm not trying to make light of it. I'm actually trying to understand who killed Charlie Kirk. And I don't think we have the answers yet. Anyway, I gave four options: trans activists, Israel, CIA, or someone else. Okay, those are the four: trans activists, Israel, CIA, or someone else. And someone joked, trans activists and Israel, that's the same option. They were joking. So in terms of my audience, with several hundred votes, trans activists turns out to be about 24%. Israel gets about 59% support. That's, almost 60% think Israel is behind this. The CIA was voted 10.6%, and then someone else got 7.6%. And these, I'm rounding some of these numbers. But anyway, you get the idea. So most people, at least in my group, believe that Israel is behind it. Even though I have not said conclusively that Israel is behind it, because we don't have evidence that would firmly establish that. But we also don't have any evidence, that this Tyler guy was the shooter. And yet he's been arrested, and lots of people online have already decided that he's the shooter, he's the guy, and he needs to be given the death penalty. And there's not even a video of him with a gun. There's no photo, there's no screen grab, no security footage. When he climbed off the roof, he didn't have a gun. When he was walking up the stairs on college campus, no gun, no rifle. And no, you can't just walk around with a rifle barrel down your pants very easily. And then there's all this weird stuff about him changing clothes multiple times. Maybe I'll play that video for you. Anyway, my point here, and maybe we'll cover this a little bit later, my point is that I don't see any evidence at all that this guy was the shooter. Do you? Other than just the government saying so. Government says so, but do you trust the government? Are you kidding me? Do you trust the FBI? Come on. Anyway, we'll come back around to that. We've got some other news to cover here. I want to show you a really interesting video of a meteor. You know how I've studied meteors, and we have this three-eye atlas giant space rock hurtling through our solar system right now with a lot of strange characteristics that have a lot of people on alert. Anyway, in China, I don't know when this happened. It was fairly recent. It looks like a meteor was streaking across the sky in the Shandong province, which means Eastern Mountain, by the way. If you're curious about that, the mountains of the East. So Shandong province. This meteor is streaking through the sky. And there's an automatic anti-air defense system in Shandong province. And so the anti-air launched and it took out the meteor. So check out this video. There's not any really explosion sounds or anything. It might have been too far away, but you can see the meteor being struck by anti-air defense. So I guess China's anti-air defense systems actually work. Check this out. And there you go. Now, that looks to be a pretty sizable meteor. And the anti-air defense system didn't really completely obliterate. It looks like it probably fragmented it and set it on fire even more. I don't know. Probably a lot of smaller pieces still hit the ground, but it may have saved somebody's house or car parked in the driveway or something like that. Now, I want to shift gears here for a second, although this is related to China. Do you know the name of the company in China called CATL, or C-A-T-L? C-A-T-L. They're one of the largest, well, maybe the largest vehicle battery manufacturers in the world. They also make electric vehicles. So it's an EV battery company that also makes EVs. Well, they've just announced, you know, I've been tracking the chemistry of sodium ion batteries. Well, they just announced that they have a sodium ion EV battery now that is ready to be rolled out across vehicles. Now, currently, lithium ion is the chemistry that's used in EVs, and lithium ion sucks. I mean, it's just horrible. Lithium ion, you know, catches fire. It doesn't recharge very many times. In other words, it doesn't support a lot of cycles. It doesn't work in a broad temperature range, especially if temperatures get too cold or even too hot in some cases. So, you know, lithium ion is bad. And I've been waiting for sodium ion in terms of like a sodium ion off-grid system or a grid shifting system to install at my laboratory, by the way. And it looks like sodium ion is finally beginning to mature. Well, check this out. So the CATL company, C-A-T-L, their new EV battery is half the cost of a lithium ion battery. Okay, half the cost. It lasts 5 times longer in terms of the number of cycles that it supports compared to lithium. You know, 5 times longer. And it's hot swappable in your vehicle. So this battery is called the Naxtra, N-A-X-T-R-A, Naxtra battery. And when you drive your car into a station that's equipped to handle this, it'll swap out the battery in 3 minutes. So instead of sitting there for 3 hours waiting for your vehicle to charge, you swap out the battery and you keep driving. It turns out that this battery will outlast the vehicle in many cases. And it's not hard to see the economics of this, how it's going to work. In the near future, you'll buy a vehicle without a battery, and you'll just use the battery from your last vehicle. The battery will outlast the vehicle. And of course, you could buy a whole new battery if you want, but these batteries will be things that you take with you when you sell the car. You're like, battery's still got, you know, 10 years on it. I'm going to keep the battery and put it in the next car. So a battery that is this sodium ion vehicle battery will be more standardized, and it will be an investment that you make for transportation, a battery that can be used in multiple different vehicles. Now, I'm not saying that you can manually swap it out. It's still very large and heavy, and it requires probably a hydraulic lift or something to swap it out. But it is being built with an auto swap feature that only takes about 3 minutes. With the right machinery. So, very interesting. That's a game changer. Okay, the next thing I want to mention is about AI and AI agents. There have been so many improvements in AI code writing over the last just few weeks. It's really astonishing that I am now running almost all day two different coding agents that are building tools and processing data for our AI engine. But building tools for, well, all kinds of things. But data pipeline processing, for the most part. Now, one of the AI agents I'm using is building apps. And this is through a process that's known as vibe coding. So if you ever hear the term vibe coding, what it means is writing code without writing code. It means what you're doing is simply writing prompts to build code. You're telling an environment or an agent what to build. And then the agent goes off and builds that and tests it and brings you back the results and, you know, fixes errors and all kinds of things like that. So I'm using this extensively now. And I want to share with you why this is so important because, for example, over the weekend, I built an app for a grand total of about $100 in fees, AI fees, that easily would have cost $10,000 for a human coder to build, easily. So, you know, think about it. That's a factor of 100 times cheaper to build it with AI compared to a human coder. And I was able to do it on the weekend, which is great because normally humans don't work on weekends, except for me. I work on weekends, and that's when I want to work with other people, but they're not working because the weekends is when I can get the most stuff done because I don't have all these distractions of, you know, day-to-day company stuff. So I like to build on the weekends, and so I'm loving the fact that I've got AI agents that I can actually build with, and they're churning for hours and hours and building stuff, doing things. It's pretty astonishing. Now, what's important to know about this is that I believe these tools are moving ahead so rapidly, and they're so advanced now, they're so easy for people to use who are non-coders, that within the next 2 years, any company that does not have some kind of AI infrastructure, of some kind, either writing code or analyzing numbers or giving projections or what have you, I think those companies are going to be going out of business. I think every company is going to have to learn how to use AI or you will be obsolete. In fact, I'm certain of it. And that's why I'm working so hard on, you know, incorporating AI into what we do. Because I want to make sure that we can stick around here for you. And that we can continue to bring you, you know, news and podcasts and everything. And so, obviously, we're going to use the best technology we can today as part of our pro-human mission. A mission to reach 1 billion people with decentralized knowledge. To bypass censorship. Now, if you go back to naturalnews.com, I've actually then published the details of my moonshot mission and kind of how we're doing it and what's our focus area and all the different training content that we've used for this. So it's really strong. You can check that out at naturalnews.com. And I've also posted another article called Why We Need the Charlie Kirk Free Speech Act, a legal shield against the censorship industrial complex. And even though I've covered this in the last few days, I wanted to read this for you. I'm proposing this law. This is different from what Trump is proposing. Trump's proposing what he calls the Charlie Kirk Act, which he wants to, I think, censor the corporate media and control what they're allowed to say. My version of the act, which I think I proposed first, actually, the Charlie Kirk Free Speech Act, would outlaw viewpoint discrimination on all the large platforms, tech platforms, social media, universities, etc. It would fine violators $1 billion per day if they engage in algorithmic or manual censorship of protected speech. It would explicitly protect political speech, medical, scientific, religious, even anti-government speech, speech that's critical of governments. It would establish a $1 trillion compensation fund for victims of censorship. That is, for those who have been censored, you'll get compensated as these tech companies pay fines into this compensation fund to help compensate you for all the damage, all the economic damage, the lost business damage, the reputation damage, the smears, the lost years. And it will also, this law will criminally prosecute executives who engage in the systematic suppression of free speech. And that's why it's important. So if you want to read the details about that, I've got it at naturalnews.com. Just look on the left-hand column there, except on a mobile device, it won't show you that. That's the desktop version of the site. On a mobile device, it won't show you the same left column, so you have to search for it, but it says Why We Need the Charlie Kirk Free Speech Act. Okay, changing the subject here, I've got some really great news to share with you just about the success of a peptide therapy that I experienced over the weekend. So I've mentioned before that, well, many months ago, I started taking BPC-157 as a nasal, just a nasal spray. This is a peptide for healing old injuries. And I continue to be very excited about how effective this has been. It enabled me to be able to start jogging again. And then I've been jogging now for a few months, and I jog about 30 minutes a day. And this weekend, something really amazing kicked in, and I discovered that my 30-minute jog time, like the same path that I have been jogging in 30 minutes, I'm now doing it in 20 minutes. So my jogging speed just increased, you know, substantially. And also kettlebell strength and reps and everything is just increasing substantially. And I'm using other peptides too. I'm using, what is this? The 5-amino-1-MQ. I'm using that. But these peptides are available from Limitless is the company name. You can find them through rangerdeals.com. There's a link there. You can click on Limitless peptides, and they have nootropics. They have the BPC-157 nasal version, which is what I use, the nasal spray. They've got an oral version, capsules of BPC-157, and they've got combinations of BPC-157 with some other things. TB frag, copper, thymosin, beta, oh, that's TB. Yeah. Anyways, there's different combinations available there. And we are an affiliate of Limitless, and if you use discount code RANGER, it will save you 10 or 15%, which is a very big deal because these are not cheap, that's for sure. But I'm just astonished at how effective that they have been. Because, you know, I've always been into nutrition, obviously, and I eat very well. I'm not into junk food. You know, I do smoothies every day. I take care of my health. I have superfoods, you know, I do herbs, I do essential oils, I do all kinds of things. And yet there was still something missing for me. And it was the signal to rebuild blood vessels to like injured areas and scar tissue areas that I've suffered from because of my martial arts training. So the BPC-157, that's what it does. It rebuilds blood supply to injured areas, brings them blood to help them heal. And since I have very healthy blood, you probably do too, then the healthy blood gets there and really heals those tissues rapidly. Because I've got plenty of zinc, you know, I've got plenty of vitamin C and, you know, all kinds of other nutrients, superfood nutrients, anthocyanins and what have you. And I've got good, healthy, you know, flowing blood. I take resveratrol and obviously, you know, ahi flower oil, which thins the blood a little bit. Just because it's like a plant-based DHA, etc. So I've got good, healthy, flowing blood, but I was missing the signal. And what peptides do is it sends your body the signal to start healing. And a lot of these peptides work on the endocrine system, and that's why they're useful. You know, some people use there's injectable forms of these peptides. That's not what I focus on. I focus on the nasal and the oral. But some people use injectables for all kinds of different things. And it's just a small amount that they inject, but it sends a very big signal to the body to make a major change, like, you know, producing more growth hormone or what have you, or, you know, supporting the thyroid gland, all kinds of things. So these are all experimental, by the way. They're not FDA approved. They're not sold as medicines or even as supplements. But if you would like to investigate them and do your own research, then you can find the link at rangerdeals.com and just click on Limitless there. You'll see it as one of the partners and use discount code RANGER. Now, I'm going to be jogging longer now. I mean, I have to extend my normal jogging path because I have to bring it back up to 30 minutes. But now I'll be covering a lot more ground in 30 minutes than I was previously. So it just feels fun. I love jogging. How about you? Do you enjoy getting out and jogging? Just the freedom of it, just being able to jog around. I also have a trike, and sometimes I bike with the trike. Mike on a bike and a trike outside in the sunshine, you know, with my shirt off and wearing shorts, just getting as much sunlight as I can. And so I'm getting plenty of sun. I'm getting, you know, good peptides, good nutrition, good exercise, fresh air, clean water. Hey, what else can you ask for? You know, God provides. It's an amazing world, and God and Mother Nature give us the things that we need to be healthy. So just take advantage of that and enjoy good health. All right, now let's get back to the Charlie Kirk assassination. What a tragedy for America. I'm so sad that that happened. And it's critical that we get to the bottom of this to find out who's behind it. Now, I absolutely understand why so many people think Israel might be behind it, because, of course, Israel is the assassination capital of the world, and Israel is incredibly good at killing people. They bragged about their pagers, how they spent years infiltrating the supply chain of pagers, and they got all these pagers into the hands of all these people in Lebanon, you know, part of Hezbollah, but also a lot of just first responders, regular folks. And then they detonated all the pagers all at once one day and blew everybody's hands off and killed a bunch of people, killed some children. And then they bragged about it. And more recently, Israel assassinated the entire leader and cabinet of the country of Yemen by bombing a government building where they were having a meeting, just killed almost all of them. The entire cabinet wiped out in one bombing. Israel routinely kills nuclear scientists in Iran and assassinates people in Europe, assassinates people all over the Middle East, etc. So, you know, it's not crazy to say that Israel is capable of doing this. That doesn't mean they did it, though. And as of right now, there's no hard evidence linking Israel to this. There are some videos from Charlie Kirk himself, videos which are being rapidly scrubbed from YouTube, by the way, where he's asking questions about, was October 7th, did that involve a stand down order, for example? Or shouldn't we be asking more questions about Israel? Things like that. Or Gaza is a giant, you know, it's a giant prison camp or something like that, he said. Well, all those things may be true, but still that doesn't prove that Israel is behind the assassination. So let's look at it from the other side. What about this guy who's been arrested? What's his name? Is it Tyler something? Anyway, the alleged shooter. Well, it seems like almost everybody right now has already decided that that's the guy, that he's guilty. But there are so many questions about that. For example, there's no video of him, you know, climbing off the roof with a rifle. And that guy has said he's apparently pleaded not guilty. And he's not cooperating with law enforcement. He's not confessing that he did it. And I saw a quote where he said that his body double did the shooting or something like that. I forgot exactly what he said, but it was something like the body double did the shooting. That's very strange. There are so many weird anomalies with this event that it's hard to believe the government's official narrative. And did you know that in addition to, as we're told, that he disassembled the rifle and then, you know, reassembled it? I guess we're told that he was walking around campus with the barrel down his pants. Doesn't even make any sense. And then he climbed up on the roof somehow with a gun barrel down his pants, which doesn't sound possible. And then he got on the roof, and then he assembled the rifle there, even though normally assembling that kind of rifle requires a workbench and tools and a gun vise. And it's a tricky thing, actually. It's not trivial. And then he took the shot, which doesn't make sense, because if you disassemble and reassemble a rifle, you normally have to re-zero it, because obviously the optics had to be remounted, and you would have to re-zero it, you know? You couldn't trust the shot if you assembled it all of a sudden. Anyway, we're told then he disassembled it after he took the shot. Like quickly, magically, in a moment, he disassembled it, stuck the barrel down his pants again, then jumped off the roof somehow with a gun barrel down his pants, which I'm pretty sure that would be very painful and you'd break something. And then we're told that he ran to the woods, and then that he reassembled the rifle in the woods, only to leave it there. and then run away so that the FBI could find the rifle. Now, that makes no sense at all. So the official story is just total nonsense. But it gets worse. It turns out that while he was assembling and disassembling the gun, he was also changing his clothes multiple times. Yes, he was changing his clothes. And here we have Utah Governor Cox, who's a real, he's a not a good person. Here he is in 20 seconds. He's explaining how many times that they believe this guy changed his clothes because, you know, the culprit they saw had different clothes from the clothes that this guy was wearing. So they're just saying, well, he must have changed them. Well, maybe they got the wrong guy. Maybe there is a guy that looks like him wearing different clothes. Ever thought about that? Anyway, listen to Governor Cox stumble through this explanation of how many times that the alleged shooter changed clothes while also assembling and disassembling the rifle multiple times. That's a skill right there. It would take like four hands. Check this out.
Yes, yes. So so when he's first spotted on campus, he has different clothing on, and then he changes clothing on the roof and then changed back into that clothing at some point so that when he was arrested, the clothing matched the clothing he had on before the shooting here at UVU.
So wait a second. So he says that the so-called shooter climbs up on the roof and then changes clothes on the roof. What? Because the first thing you want to do when you're on a roof and you're trying to hide and you're about ready to shoot somebody, the first thing you want to do is obviously change your clothes. Yeah, that makes no sense at all. Why would you change your clothes on the roof? And when did he have time to change clothes when he's so busy reassembling and disassembling the rifle? So, you know, this official story is absolute nonsense. And, you know, it's so bizarre to me to see a lot of people in alternative media who are now absolutely convinced somehow, they just believe the government propaganda at this point, but they're saying that this is Charlie Kirk's assassin. You know, even Alex Jones is saying that right now. And he was the one to question Sandy Hook. But of course, you know, he got handed a big civil suit over Sandy Hook. So for now, Alex is actually, he's believing the government line. For the moment, maybe that'll change. Alex is usually very good at questioning things. But right now, I'm a little bit shocked that he thinks that this guy is the assassin. You know, based on what? Based on what the government told you? I mean, come on. Also, no bullet has been recovered from the shooting. No bullet. And in case you're wondering, if they find the bullet, can they match it to the gun? The answer is no. There's actually no such thing as a ballistics matching of a bullet to a specific barrel. That is a complete Hollywood hoax. That does not exist in the real world. Now, some law enforcement will still try to use that, but they're literally making it up, like hair analysis. The FBI used to rely on hair analysis many decades ago, and they would convict people because they would look at their hair sample under a microscope and they would say, yep, it looks like the hair from that was found at the scene. You know, it's like, yeah, it's because it all hair looks very similar. If you're in the same race, like black person's hair looks like black person's hair. It looks like all black people's hair, you know, or Indian hair looks like everybody's Indian hair, you know? I mean, Chinese hair looks like Chinese hair. It's all the same hair. It's not like you could actually convict a person or nail it down to one person. So hair analysis has always been a total scam, total hoax. Ballistic analysis of bullets is the same scam. No such thing. In the tests that have been conducted to try to test, you know, ballistics analysis, the answers that were given by law enforcement after they examined the bullets and the barrels, the answers were no better than random chance. So there's actually no matching of a bullet to a barrel. So if you see them, the authorities, if they start to say, we got the bullet and then we matched it to the barrel, now you know for sure they're just completely lying, because there is no such thing as matching a bullet to a barrel. I mean, think about it. It doesn't even make any sense. I mean, all the barrels are smooth, except for the rifling in the barrels, right? I mean, they all have rifling, but other than that, they're smooth. And the rifling is the same in all the barrels from the same manufacturing lot. So if you look at a bullet and you see like rifling scars that are a certain distance apart, that could be from any barrel in that same production lot. It doesn't, like, there's not a fingerprint that gets put on the bullet from the barrel. There's no fingerprint. You know, I mean, it's absurd to even think that that's possible. It's always been a hoax. So don't believe that. If they roll that out, it's a total lie. So anyway, we have a lot of questions right now. And Ian Smith, who is one of the guys, I think he's the guy who got famous for saying no to closing down his gym during the COVID lockdowns. Ian Smith Fitness is his name on X. Ian Smith Sr. He put out a list of all the things that don't add up. Like the fact that there are these decoys, a couple of decoy guys there. And what about the private jet that disappeared from public tracking? Why did Charlie Kirk's security team immediately dismantle the scene and just destroy the scene evidence and took down the cameras and also the poster that was behind Charlie Kirk? And why is there no blood splatter? Sorry to be graphic about this, but there's no blood splatter behind Charlie Kirk. If the bullet entered from the front and went through his neck, wouldn't you see something behind his neck on that white giant, you know, banner that was behind him? But you see nothing. And then they hurry and take it down and they destroy the evidence. There's been really no forensics at all. There's no autopsy. There's no image of the so-called gunman with a gun, even though there must be 1,000 cameras all across campus. You know, there's weird things about him changing clothes so many times. You know, what about the confession? We're told that this shooter confessed to his father, but then he pleads not guilty in court. So he's not saying that he's guilty. So is his dad making this up? Maybe. I mean, who knows? And there are so many questions about this that anybody leaping to the conclusion that this is the guy, this is absolutely the guy. Come on. That's what, you know, the government wants you to believe. That's what maybe the media wants you to believe. But we don't have any substantial evidence to support that at the moment. It looks like this guy's a patsy. It looks like somebody else did this. Now, I don't know who that is. I don't know if it's CIA or Mossad or MI6 or, you know, name your other favorite intelligence agents. Maybe it's Iran. Maybe it's North Korea for some reason. Who knows? But I don't think it's the guy they got, because that guy, think about it. There would be all kinds of video of that guy carrying a rifle around. And putting the rifle on the roof and taking the rifle off the roof. And he wouldn't have reassembled it to leave it in the woods. That's insane. He wouldn't have changed clothes on the roof. You know, these are stupid claims. It just doesn't make any sense. And then Kash Patel gives a conference, and he ends it with, "I'll see you in Valhalla." Like, what? So now we're invoking Norse mythology? Did you check with Odin, the Norse god, for permission to enter Valhalla? I mean, what on earth are we talking about here? Charlie Kirk was a Christian. Wouldn't you say, "I'll see you in heaven" or something? Is there some reason why the director of the FBI can't say the word heaven? I mean, seriously. And then what's the deal with this drone flying around? So there's a drone that's flying directly over the event. I mean, there are a lot of questions here, and the official narrative is not making any sense. However, at the same time, it doesn't mean that we know who did it yet. It's still too early. We can't say for sure who's behind it, but maybe we will. Maybe we never will. I just don't know. Now, the ADL has issued a report denouncing, quote, anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. naming people like Ian Carroll and Syrian girl, etc. I mean, don't be ridiculous. It's not anti-Semitic to think that Israel assassinated somebody. I mean, that's what they do, you know? I mean, it doesn't mean that you hate Jews to actually credit Israel with being incredibly capable at killing people, because, you know, Netanyahu even brags about it. He gave President Trump a golden pager. What do you think that indicated? It indicated, hey, we're going to blow you up too if you don't do what we say, you know, because everybody knows Israel can kill anybody, anytime, anywhere on the planet. And they do. They do it repeatedly. It's not anti-Semitic to say that, you know, Israel's good at murdering people. They do it every day, for God's sake. So it's not anti-Semitic. Now, at the same time, we don't, in my opinion, we don't have evidence that Israel is behind this. Israel does benefit in some ways from Charlie Kirk no longer asking questions and then Ben Shapiro coming in to take over, because Ben Shapiro, you know, full-blown loyal Zionist, that's for sure. So, yeah, Israel benefits, but, you know, logically that doesn't mean that Israel is behind it. We just don't know. But I'm not convinced that this Tyler guy is behind it. He seems like a patsy. So I guess we'll either have to hope that some additional information comes out that tells us one way or another who's behind it. Or maybe it'll be like the JFK assassination. We'll never know. I mean, that's the most likely outcome, actually, is that we'll probably never know. One more thought in all of this is that these radical leftists, it turns out that almost all of them are vaccinated. The ones that are just celebrating Charlie Kirk's death, they're vaccinated. Almost all of them. And I've said this before, the vaccines cause brain damage. And of course, radical leftists, they love vaccines because they trust the science, they trust Fauci, they trusted the Biden administration, even though it was Trump's Operation Warp Speed. But as soon as Biden came into office, these dumbass leftists, they're like, yeah, now it's Biden's vaccine, I'll take it. And they took it. And they took it over and over again. And I think it has literally damaged their higher brain function. And it's caused many of them to revert to their reptilian brainstem, where all they understand is, you know, like aggression and anger or sex or, you know, just animalistic drives. That's all they understand. And that's the way they're acting out now. You see this across the radical left, how much they celebrate Charlie's death. And it's very common among school teachers for some reason. So, you know, teachers across America, not all of them, but most of them are radical leftists, and they're all vaccinated, right? And they've lost their higher brain function, and they've become, you know, reptilian animals who are just seething with anger and hatred, or in some cases joy when Charlie Kirk gets shot. But that's who's teaching your children and grandchildren across this country. And that's why I said that we've got to purge all these insane leftists out of their jobs. That is, the ones that have influence or are teaching children or have a lot of influence over society. They're no longer capable of interacting with society in a civilized way. They cannot be part of a sustainable civilization. So we need to remove them from those positions completely. And I don't know, let them go sweep floors or something. Until the robots take over, or even after the robots take over, just give them something to do. Here, push a broom, you know. No more teaching children for you. You can talk to the dust on the floor, you know. But there's a lot of crazy, insane leftists in this country, obviously, and a lot of them have come out of the woodwork over this Charlie Kirk situation. And a lot of leftists who people thought were just sort of, you know, ordinary liberals have turned out to be insane, like zombie brain leftists. And so in the past, we've talked about the zombie wave, right? When the zombies attack. Well, what if that's here? What if the vaccines created the zombies and now the zombies are coming out drooling with hatred for humanity and hatred for Trump and hatred for America. And they're all triggered by the American flag too. They hate the flag, you know, they hate free speech. They want to kill everybody. They're like zombies or vampires or something, werewolves, I don't know, all kinds of weird undead creatures, but that's the radical left. That's what they have become. My guess is that things are going to get a lot crazier. I think we are going to see a lot more, let's say, terrorism from the left. There, in fact, there was a Fox News van that was just firebombed by a couple of leftists in Utah. Apparently, they got caught and they've been arrested. What is it? Yeah, a Fox News vehicle. A device found under a news media vehicle in Utah. Two men were arrested on suspicion of placing an incendiary device. The bomb failed to detonate, but FBI searched the vehicle and uncovered explosives, firearms, drugs, and hoax weapons of mass destruction. Well, was the FBI searching their own van? I mean, that sounds like something the FBI would be carrying around. Hoax weapons of mass destruction? That's funny. That's in the Associated Press story, by the way. That's actually hilarious. But whatever, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. So, you know, be prepared. Obviously, we are entering some very insane times. Have backup plans. Support our sponsors, the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. And remember, they've got the dark bags, the Faraday bags that protect your electronic devices. And they've also got solar generators to capture and generate power, you know, from the sun, obviously. So always good to have backup plans. And then for your nutrition and foods, superfoods, healthrangerstore.com is your destination. And then if you're interested in those peptides I mentioned earlier, the one that I am so impressed with is called BPC-157. And it's available at Limitless, which you can find through rangerdeals.com. And there's a nasal spray format. There's a couple different formats. They all work. They're all good. And do your own research on that. You can also use our Enoch AI engine to do some research about peptides. You can find Enoch. It's free at brighteon.ai. And it's also going to keep getting better because we keep making improvements. A lot of good stuff happening. Finally achieved some milestones on the data transfer for a lot of the data, training data for this project. Oh my God, it's huge. It's just, I now have, I have 400 terabytes of solid state storage online on my local network now. 400 terabytes. And believe me, when you try to transfer files, like let's say a million files, each one between 1 and 10 megabytes, okay? A million files. How do you do that? Well, I'll tell you right now, you can't just like copy and paste in Windows. For sure, that's not going to work. There's a whole art to this, and I have become the master now of moving large files across networks. So anyway, there's more good stuff coming at brighteon.ai as we roll out new updates to the models. So check it out. It's free of charge. All right. With that said, we've got a very interesting interview for you here today, which is featuring Torsten Trey, Dr. Trey, who is Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting, or DAFO, D-A-F-O-H, Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting. And this is a group that speaks out against the forced organ harvesting, specifically in China, although I mentioned to him in the interview that this goes on in America too, but that's not his focus. His focus is China. I'm just like, I'm pretty sure it's more than China. That's all I'm saying. check out this interview and make up your own mind, see what you think. But anyway, organ harvesting is happening and it's a crime against humanity. That's for sure. It's not cool that this is going on, but I'll have another fantastic interview for you tomorrow as well. We're going to have a great lineup for you this week. But enjoy today's interview, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. Be well.
And so what you are saying is that in China, they're farming human organ inventory.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the government, the court system. You can buy anything, a kidney organ or liver organ is just a commodity, and you can just pay for it to get it.
Powerful people, wealthy people can get organs. Welcome to today's interview here on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And as you know, I have for years spoken out against organ harvesting and organ trafficking operations. And our special guest today is the founder of an organization called Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting. That's DAFOH.org. If you want to check out the website, we'll show you some of it. Our guest is the founder, Dr. Torsten Trey, who joins us now to talk about this practice and why some people are being killed for their organs and how this violates all the standards of, you know, ethics and humanity and medicine as well. But welcome, Dr. Trey, to the show today. It's great to have you on as a guest.
Thank you, Mike, for having me. I'm very glad to be here and share what I can share with your audience.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. And you and I have just met just now. This is the first time we've ever spoken. And I'm not familiar with your organization. I'd love to learn more. But I just want you to know I have interviewed other experts in previous years about this very topic. And I've talked about some books. I forgot the name, like Red Trade or something was one of the books about organ harvesting and organ trade. But tell us about DAFOH, D-A-F-O-H, Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting, and why you have made this your mission.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. So in 2006, I learned actually from an article in the newspaper, the Epoch Times, that there was a whistleblower who said that her husband was a surgeon in China, and he removed corneas, eyes, corneas from 2,000 Falun Gong practitioners. And at that time, I thought, wow, that's impossible. And I got interested in this. I followed it. And then there was a few months later, a report by two Canadian investigators, David Kilgour, David Matters. They did phone calls to China pretending that they needed a kidney, an organ. And on the other side of the phone, in the Chinese hospitals, they said, actually, yes, we have only these organs, fresh organs. They asked specifically if they have organs from Falun Gong practitioners because they are more healthy. On the other side, they said, yes, our organs are only from this kind. So at this time, I got really alert, and I myself went to Boston and to the World Transplant Congress, and I, in the hope of talking to some surgeons from China, I did. And exactly, I found what I suspected. There's an abundance of organs in China, and they have a high number of transplants. And that didn't make sense because they didn't have an organ donor program. So when I asked one of them where the organs come from, he admitted to me the organs are coming from Falun Gong practitioners. And at that time, in the summer of 2006, I said, I have to do something. There's nobody around who would step up. And the doctors are usually busy. So I decided I'm going to start an NGO, Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting, and bring more people, more doctors together to inform the medical community and the public.
That's really extraordinary. And may I ask, where are you based, or your organization?
We have our headquarters in Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C., okay. All right, so, and also for our audience, I just want to mention Falun Gong is a peaceful, it's a Tai Chi kind of practice that involves both spiritual and physical movements for good health and longevity and spiritual awareness. It's a practice I support. It's a practice that it's pursued by many people in Chinese culture. And as our audience knows, I speak Chinese. I lived in Taiwan. I know the Chinese culture very well. I used to see Falun Gong practitioners in the park on the mornings. Very early morning. They are the early risers of Chinese culture. And so what you are saying is that in China, that there is a marketplace for, kidnapping, otherwise taking Falun Gong practitioners and then harvesting their organs while they're living, or killing them for their organs, or both. What is it?
So what happened is in 1999, there were about 100 million Falun Gong practitioners. And at that time, the chairman, the party leader, Jiang Zemin, probably because of jealousy or because there were more practitioners than members in the Communist Party, or because he found that they expose actually the evil character of the CCP. Anyhow, overnight he banned Falun Gong and started a persecution against all these millions of people. So they were detained and in detention camps, probably more than a million practitioners. And they were brainwashed, at times tortured. And then also the rule was if they were killed under torture, that would be counted as suicide. They committed suicide. So at one point, then they started probably to see that instead of just killing them or torturing them to death, they could actually make profit of it if they use their bodies as organ source. And then they started to take blood, build up a data bank of the blood types, the tissue types. They did ultrasounds. And what we hear from a regular criminal inmates is that these blood tests were only done on Falun Gong practitioners, not on the other inmates, the criminal inmates who really committed crimes.
I see.
So it was like a targeted bank. And I remember that David Kilgore, he visited one of the patients who went to China for organ transplant. And that patient told him that the doctor, he had like a chart. And then he went down the chart and made this movement. So this illustrates that they have a data bank of all the inmates, detained Falun Gong inmates, detainees. And then they can just, when a patient comes, they just go to the data bank and say, okay, the prisoner in cell 501 has this blood type, we can use him as a kidney.
They're farming human organ inventory.
Yeah, exactly.
And
you say you use the right word. They farm, and you can only do that in a society where you have all the infrastructure on your side. So it's the government, the court system, the police, the wards in the detention camp. Like all of them, they are working together to farm. You would not be able to to raise such an organ farm. For example, here in the U.S.
Okay, that's very disturbing information. And I think it's well known in the United States that if you're a wealthy person or a connected person, you can get organs, you can get tissue, you can get tendon pieces or whatever you need. Famously, I think the former founder or CEO of Apple, Steve Jobs, when he had cancer, I think that he was placed at the top of a transplant list. That probably did not involve China, but there's a sense, and I'd like you to speak to this, there's a sense, I would say a sort of low-level awareness in America that powerful people, wealthy people can get organs. Are those organs often coming from China in your research?
It is true that basically think this way that the heads of transplantation centers, they are aware of this here in the US. They are aware of the forced organ harvesting in China, and they know that you can get a transplant organ within 2 weeks in China. So when there are wealthy people coming and to them and ask them, what can I do to get an organ in a fast pace? Then I would think that some of them say, well, there's an option going to China. And this is not just like a theory, but I was actually told by a consultant doctor who told me about the head of a hospital that I don't want to name here. But he knew that the head of that transplant department referred wealthy people to China. So there is this thinking of you can buy anything, a kidney organ or liver organ is just a commodity and you can just pay for it to get it.
Okay. Let me ask you a sensitive question. And I know this isn't your area of focus, but one of my family members was, I would say they were organ harvested in the United States, died of a drug overdose, fentanyl, and was kept alive until the organs could be taken from that person. They were pronounced brain dead, and then the organs were taken. There's HHS Secretary RFK Jr. has recently raised the alarm over what I would call organ harvesting happening in the United States, but not in the same way that you're describing in China. Can you speak to what are the differences? Because clearly there is organ transplantation and organ extraction taking place in America and in Europe, et cetera. How is that different from what you're describing as happening in China, where there's more of an entire infrastructure for this?
Yeah, in China, you think of this as has become an industry, and we are talking about tens of thousands of transplants that are performed based on organs that are illegally, criminally harvested from prisoners of conscience.
I see.
And there is a whole infrastructure behind it. So this happened over the past 20 plus years, and I have noticed that this effect that how China approaches the transplant field has undermined or eroded the ethical standards in the West too. You think of it like a competition, like China can provide an organ within 2 weeks, and here in the US, you need to wait 5 years for a kidney. So there's like China is out competing the transplant field here in the US, if you want. So in some cases, there might now be the situation where the doctors are desperate here in the US to provide organs. And then in single cases, they might shift the ethical goalpost to get to that organ faster.
And I see.
And it's like, I would call it, it's a ripple effect of what China is doing, how China has aggressively approached this transplant field, that doctors in the U.S. are tempted to, you know, follow and get to those donor organs faster and not in the right way.
It might be also, I'm sure this is a factor where people, sort of like you go to a restaurant, you order a hamburger, you don't want to know how that cow was killed. You know, you don't want to see the slaughterhouse. You don't want to have to kill the cow yourself. It seems like a similar thing could happen in organ transplants, where there might be a doctor in the US or some other country that's like, I really just don't want to know where this came from. I want the organ to help this patient here. Is that kind of in line with what you were just describing? Or what would you add to that?
A bioethicist, Professor Arthur Kaplan, he basically stated that the doctor team that conducts the transplantation has to know where the organs come from. It's basically part of their responsibility to, and also part for transparency and the traceability of the organs, that the doctor team knows where the organs come from. That's an ethical standard, an ethical guideline, if you want. And those guidelines seem to, you know, erode over time. So some people rather say, don't think of the organ donor, but just think of who's the recipient. We have to, you know, we need that organ to perform the transplant surgery.
Well, right, but that's... Isn't that also a conflict of interest, where there's a lot of money in the transplant procedure and in the post-op the visitation, the anti-rejection drugs, the hospital visits, all of this can be billed to Medicare and insurance companies. So there's a conflict of interest when you're speaking about bioethics. One of the things that we've seen, obviously, in all forms of medicine, is that when there's money to be made, the ethics go out the window, often.
Then it can be true that money is a factor, but I would say in the case of doctors, it might be that the wish to help, the wish to conduct the to perform the organ transplantation, that might be the reason to shift the goalposts. It's not necessarily because of the money. It's maybe in some cases because of the money, but they might rather be motivated by motivated to shift the goalposts of ethics just to to provide this transplant surgery.
I understand. Okay. All right. Thank you for that answer. Let me ask you about organ donation in the United States, and I suspect this might be a very contentious area, but because of the increased awareness of the practice of declaring patients to be brain dead, which does not have a rigorous basis in physiology, it's kind of a made-up designation. At least in my opinion, but I'd love your answer. And it's okay if you disagree, it's completely okay. But because of that, I think that fewer people in America trust the American medical system to honor their wishes to be actually dead before the organs are taken. And as a result, there might be fewer and fewer people who are organ donors. Like, for example, I refuse to be an organ donor for this very reason. Because I know too much. So, but then doesn't that create scarcity of the organs that then may cause a shift of demand to Chinese-derived organs? So isn't this an intertwined issue?
Well, actually, America is a country that has the largest number of registered organ donors, and it has increased. I think there are right now more than 160 million registered organ donors. So it's what you said is not really reflected in the numbers of the registered organ donors. However, there you mentioned the word trust, and that's a key word in the organ transplantation. You have to have trust that the organ was ethically provided, and also that you get the medical treatment to the point that they really want to save your life, not to get your organs. So what happens in the medical field here is that they are under pressure to say where they say, well, if the organ is fresh, it's freshly procured, it has a better survival time. It's better for the recipient.
Yes.
So it's kind of like almost like a competition against the time where you try to, you have to wait for the procedure to determine that death has occurred. But then also you want to rush for the benefit of the recipient. It's a very tricky time management, and it really depends on how the medical doctor in charge, how he's rooted in the ethical field, I think.
I have a follow-up question on that. If you're saying that America has 160 million registered organ donors, why are we always told that there's a shortage of organs? We're constantly reminded of that by the medical establishment.
Yeah. So what happened is not every registered organ donor will eventually become an eligible organ donor.
Yes.
And what happened is that in many countries, it's about like 1% of the people who deceased, 1% of the registered organ donors who deceased are actually becoming eligible as organ donor. So if you have this huge number, then at the end, it's actually You just have maybe 20,000 organ donors per year in the US or less. And that's a common phenomenon, this 1%. 1%, you have also see this in the UK, in France, in Canada. But interestingly, in China, where the organ donor program is so small, basically they claim that they can have organs from 12% of the registered organ donors. And that already tells you that they how they manipulate the data. So either if the numbers are correct, that is outstanding. But then the question is, how do they get to 12% if all other countries only have 1%?
So let me ask you, in a reputable country, you talk about the 1% that become eligible organ donors. Please describe to us, obviously some of that is through accidents. People have traffic accidents or motorcycle accidents or whatever. What are the actual, what are the things that happen that make people organ donors?
Yeah, well, one aspect are accidents, fatal accidents. Then other cases are when people decease on the ICU with a heart arrest or brain death after an accident. Those are the typical ways to where they become organ donor or potential organ donors.
I see. And don't forget drug overdose, because I know that personally from my family. But I'm told that that's a very big vector of young males, especially coming into the emergency rooms with drug overdose, and that are then typically pronounced brain dead.
Yeah.
Okay. Then back to your organization. Let me give out your website again, dafoh.org. It's Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting. What does your organization seek to do? Is it to provide diplomatic pressure onto China to change their practices? Is it exposing that this is happening? What are your means of hoping to affect change?
So our main mission is basically to provide information, to share objective findings with the medical community and the public, because as you probably know yourself and many members in your from your audience, many people have not heard about forced organ harvesting on this industrial scale in China, because China spends billions of dollars to suppress the information in the mainstream media. So we are basically swimming against this stream where we want to break this silence and this cover up by talking and informing about this practice, which I did. For example, do right now.
Yes.
We are speaking on webinars. We have organized a world summit on this topic. We have run a petition where we collected 3 million signatures, which is one of the largest civil petitions ever. So we use different ways to reach out to people and to inform them. Basically, to inform people on a way that usually how the newspaper should inform people.
Okay, so your number one mission is awareness right now.
Awareness, and then after the awareness comes to stop the practice.
Okay, what do you think would be a means of achieving that? Would it be international pressure on China's government, or how might that even work?
Yeah, so there are actually plenty of ways, and the essence of this, what can be done? The essence of this is that China tries everything to silence, to quiet down everyone who talks about it. So that gives you exactly the answer. What has to be done? We have to. Make people knowledgeable of this effect. I give you an example. In 1989, when the student massacre occurred on the Tiananmen Square, then everyone could see on camera how the Chinese government was killing about 3,000 students on the place, and that was horrifying. What happened afterwards is that many countries pulled out of China, and then this created an economic pressure on China. So awareness can lead to actions, and this action can be, for example, through economic means. What we are doing now is the same. Think about it. On the Tiananmen Square, there were only 3,000 students killed. But we believe that through forced organ harvesting, over 25 years, probably more than 1 million Falun Gong practitioners and others like Uyghurs, etc., they were killed for the organs, 1 million. So why was there this outcry after the Tiananmen Square massacre, but not for forced organ harvesting? The difference is that you had the footage, right? The footage immediately informed the people what was happening in China. And this is what we are doing now. We don't have that footage, but we can inform people through our research and et cetera. So we want to achieve basically the same level of information. And that is basically, that will trigger the next steps.
Let me ask a pointed question. And I think I have a responsibility to ask you from the other point of view. How do we know that this isn't like CIA disinformation to try to discredit China? Now, remember, I lived in Taiwan. I support Taiwanese people, and I support the Chinese ethnicity as people, and I support human dignity, and I'm opposed to human suffering. But I also know that the United States and Western governments are in an information war against China. They're constantly trying to discredit China and to economically weaken China. Trump has threatened tariffs on China, tariffs that he has slapped on India. And he says that China doesn't have a right to purchase oil from Russia, which seems like a very odd demand, and that he's going to punish China. But China has grown into such an economic powerhouse with exporting critical rare earth minerals, for example, that China has a lot more leverage today than they did in 1989 with Tiananmen. So Trump has backed off. But how do we know, that when you talk about the Uyghurs, for example, I've never seen any videos of Uyghurs being tortured and organ harvested. How do I know that's not just made up by the CIA that maybe fed press releases to your organization? I just got to ask.
Oh, sure. So in terms of the Uyghurs, you're basically asking about evidence, right? So in terms of the Uyghurs, we don't have that much evidence. There are some indications, and there are from the past doctors who in the Xinjiang province who harvested organs, and they came to public and basically admitted it. We have, in terms of Falun Gong, we have an abundance of evidence based on the number of witnesses that that were in detention camps and basically they had different experiences. So in terms of evidence, when we talk to one aspect, one category, yeah, and you have to think of this, there is not a single silver bullet that has all the proof. It doesn't come on a tablet. So what we have to do is we have to, it's almost like a puzzle where you have to collect the little pieces of evidence and then put it together. So one of these categories are witnesses. I hear that from one who was detained for 2 years, they blood tested that person 10 times. And there's no reason to take the blood 10 times when the person is also subject to forced labor and torture. There are no health benefits. Others reported that they received an ultrasound, an X-ray, and blood test, but there was actually nothing was done to the health. Uh-huh. Others said that they were detained, and then the police guard in the hospital said they wanted to take his blood, and he said that he didn't want them to take their blood. And the policeman asked why, and he said, in this case, the Falun Gong practitioner said, You do this to harvest my organs. And then the policeman said, yeah, this is exactly what we plan to do. So there are plenty of little stories of witnesses that if you bring them all together, you can see there's this intention to harvest the organs from the Falun Gong practitioners. But other pieces of evidence are just that, for example, annual transplant numbers, which when you compare them with other countries, had like a very obscure, course of numbers. It was going up like by 300%, and other countries only had like 15% increase over 5 years. And then the organ donor numbers, where China started a so-called organ donation program in 2013, and then they came up with, they only had, the numbers, for example, on December 30, 2015, they increased by exactly 25,000 exactly in one day. So you can see this was more like a desktop, not like real people behind these numbers.
I see.
So it was basically made up to appease the doctors in the West, that they say, well, now we have an organ donation program, and that's how we get to our transplant numbers.
I see.
But actually, okay, they deceive it. So if you take everything together, you get a very solid image of what is actually happening.
Okay. All right. Fair answer. And thank you for that. And again, the reason I wanted to have you on is because I completely oppose, obviously, forced organ harvesting and organ trafficking. And I try to teach people to take care of their own organs first. You know, the best way to not need a transplant is, you know, don't use a bunch of recreational drugs and abuse your liver with alcohol addiction, et cetera, right? So that should be the first step. Keep the organs you were born with healthier. Let me ask you another obvious question. I've seen this come up in debates about this subject. If the U.S. government were to try to pressure China over this, and I think some efforts have taken place over the years, you know, China's response would typically, I think, be, well, you have no right, USA, to lecture us because you lack ethics. I mean, you, America, you have a weapons industry that makes bombs, that ships them to the Middle East, and sometimes they bomb hospitals, they bomb doctors. So, you know, where is your medical ethics? You make weapons that kill doctors and patients and children. And then how do you lecture us about our medical ethics? How do you navigate that when the U.S. government's policies are not ethical?
I think these are two different places. Well, one is a medical place, and that's, for me as a medical doctor, this is appalling. We have we take an oath a medical oath. And that includes doing no harm. So if I see that a medical discipline like transplant medicine is abused to, for example, to eradicate unwanted, undesired people in the Chinese society and then make profit of it, that is appalling for me as a doctor in my profession.
Yes.
What you are saying with in the military field, I think that is a different field. This is regarding if you want the ethics in the military discipline.
But it's the government. So the DOD is under the United States government. And if our government is pressuring China, China would obviously respond and say, well, your government has these other ethics violations in these other areas. That's what I'm trying to get at. It's like, wouldn't it be easier for us to demand ethics of other countries if our own government had better ethics?
Of course, like everyone can improve ethics. And this is actually, this is here the problem. If China commits forced organ harvesting and thereby violates ethical standards and then gets an advantage of it, basically gets an advantage in the transplant field, then it has a ripple effect on other countries where they also say that, well, if they are cheating, if they are deceiving, then we can also do the same. Wow. So it's a problem that if one party tries to get advantages, benefits by cheating, then others are, you know, say that like, oh, I do this in the same in other fields. That, you know, it's really like a ripple effect. And the answer to this, how to solve this, is at one point you start to have a strong voice for ethics and yeah. speak up. For example, there is now a Senate bill in the Senate, a bill against forced organ harvesting. It's the Senate Bill 817. And that bill that says that, for example, people who were involved in the forced organ harvesting in China, they don't get a visa, or it asks to decouple our transplant system here in the U.S. from the Chinese transplant system. Actually, this is something that the HHS after RFK Jr. just released, I think yesterday or today. Then they asked the transplant field to decouple. From the Chinese transplant system. So basically, this is now in the Senate, and if your audience want to help, then they can call their senators and ask their senators to co-sponsor this bill.
What's the bill number again?
It's S-817.
S-817, okay. And it also seems to me, you know, in terms of helping Americans protect their organs and not needing transplants, that you know, for those who really need them, it can make them more available. And it strikes me, I've covered in the past, the FDA has been very reluctant to recall dangerous drugs that cause permanent liver damage. For example, Rezulin, which was a diabetes drug, the FDA kept it on the market for far too long. Even when it was pulled off the market in the EU, the FDA kept it on the market because of its loyalty to the pharmaceutical companies to generate profits. And all that time, it was causing at least 50,000 Americans to have liver failure. So imagine like that kind of influx onto the transplant demand, and also over-the-counter Tylenol, you know, extreme liver damage when you combine it with alcohol or other pharmaceuticals. And everybody's told to just pop Tylenol like it's candy, and it's not. It's extremely toxic to the liver with certain combinations. So aren't there things that we can do in America to stop damaging our organs, you know, even at the government level?
You're absolutely right. Medicine is not like an amusement park. Medicine is not like a fitness practice, or medicine is not meant to do all these, you know, spare time activities, if you want. Tylenol has its function in certain medical incidents, but it is not meant to be like, as you said, like a daily candy. In a few days ago, there was a meeting at a military parade in Beijing, and there was a conversation between Xi Jinping and the Russian President Putin.
Oh, the longevity comment, yeah.
Exactly, and one said, "Well, with 70, you are actually young," and then the other said, "Like, yeah, if you have actually continuous transplants, then you can be immortal." And then the other said again, yeah, you can reach 150 years. So this is basically transplant medicine is used as a, you know, like a fitness instrument.
Right.
It's used to reach longevity, but that was not the intent. The intent was to help people to cure an illness, to reach let them reach their natural age. It's not meant to achieve longevity. And
absolutely.
Here you see a parallel how people abuse medicine, either Tylenol or transplant medicine for longevity. This is not what medicine was meant to be for.
Well, I'm so glad that you prioritize medical ethics. I completely agree with you on that point. And even though we're out of time for today, I'm very happy to meet you. And I want to mention your organization again. DAFOH.org is the website. Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting. And Torsten, tell our audience how they can help support your organization.
There's a way to donate to our organization on our homepage, but I'm actually I always say that if you want to help us, just spread the word. Talk to your doctors if they know about it. Talk to your friends and neighbors. Just we are really in this this field, just pro bono. We don't want to make any profit or so. We just want to stop this practice. And the first step is to break the silence and to speak about it. That's really what it's about.
That is absolutely true. And I'll say for myself and the show here, we absolutely denounce forced organ harvesting of any kind by any country, any culture whatsoever. But then again, we denounce all forms of violence against human beings. But sadly, we have a lot of things to choose from today when it comes to violence being committed against humans. But you and I are both on the same page about human compassion, valuing life, having those pro-human values. So yes, thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Very nice to meet you, and thank you for all that you do. And again, the website, folks, is daafoh.org. Spread the word. Help support the Senate bill. Encourage your representatives in Congress to be aware of this, to call it out. We are not opposed to voluntary organ donations. We are opposed to involuntary or forced organ harvesting in all of its various forms all over the world, including in China. So thank you for joining me today. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, Brighteon.com. Take care.
Stock up on the long-term storable Ranger Bucket Set. 536 servings of clean organic superfoods for your survival pantry. Certified organic and lab tested for purity. Order now at healthrangerstore.com.